Canto 10, chapter 1, reading from the additional notes at the end of the chapter. The word Maharatha refers to a great hero who can fight alone against 11,000 other heroes. And the word Atiratha, as found in text 5, refers to one who can fight against an unlimited number. This is mentioned in the Mahabharata as follows. Ekadasha sahasrani yodaye yastudam vina astra shastra pravinascha mo maharata iti smitaha omikan yodaye yastu samprokto tiratastu saha. This is the description given in the Brihad Vaishnav Toshaniri by Srila Sanatana Goswami. Maya Manushasha in verse 17. Because of being covered by Yoga Maya, Naham Prakasham Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samarutaha. Krishna is sometimes called Maya Manushya, indicating that although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he appears like an ordinary person. A misunderstanding arises because Yoga Maya covers the vision of the general public. The Lord's position is actually different from that of an ordinary person. For although he appears to act like an ordinary man, he is always transcendental. The word Maya also indicates mercy, and sometimes it also means knowledge. The Lord is always full of all transcendental knowledge, and therefore, although he acts like a human being, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full of knowledge. In his original identity, the Lord is the controller of Maya. Mayadyakshina prakriti suyate sacharachara. Therefore, the Lord may be called Maya Manushya, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, playing like an ordinary human being, although he is the controller of both the material and spiritual energies. The Lord is the Supreme Person, Purushottama. But because we are deluded by Yoga Maya, he appears to be an ordinary person. Ultimately, however, Yoga Maya induces even a non-devotee to understand the Lord as the Supreme Person, Purushottama. In Bhagavad Gita we find two statements given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the devotees, the Lord says, Tesham satta yuktana bhajatam priti purvakam didami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Thus for the willing devotee, the Lord gives intelligence by which to understand him and return home back to Godhead. For others, for non-devotees, the Lord says, Vidyu sarvarascham. I am all plundering, inevitable death. A devotee like Prahlad enjoys the activities of Lord Nrsimhadev, whereas non-devotees like Prahlad's father, Hiranyakashipu, meet death before Lord Nrsimhadev. The Lord therefore acts in two ways, by sending some onto the path of repeated birth and death, and sending others back home, back to Godhead. The word kala, meaning black, indicates the color of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Lord Krishna and Lord Ramachandra, who both look blackish, give liberation and transcendental bliss to their devotees. Among persons possessing material bodies, sometimes someone is able to subject death to his own will. For such a person, death is almost impossible because no one wants to die. But although Bhishma Deva possessed this power, Bhishma, by the supreme will of the Lord, died very easily in the Lord's presence. There have also been many demons who had no hope of salvation. Yet Krishna, yet Kamsa attained salvation by the supreme will of the Lord. Not to speak of Kamsa, even Putana attained salvation and reached the level of the Lord's mother. Parikshit Maharaj, therefore, was very eager to hear about the Lord, who has inconceivable qualities by which to give liberation to anyone. Parikshit Maharaj, at the point of his death, was certainly interested in his liberation. When such a great and exalted personality as the Lord behaves like an ordinary human being, although possessing inconceivable qualities, his behavior is called Maya. Therefore, the Lord is described as Maya Manushya. This is the opinion of Srila Jiva Goswami. Mu refers to mukti, or salvation, and Ku refers to that which is bad, or very obnoxious. Thus Muku, refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who saves one from the bad condition of material existence. The Lord is called Mukunda because he not only saves the devotee from material existence, but offers him transcendental bliss in love and service. The Lord Krishna comes to this world sometimes in his original form, and much more often in other avatar forms, lila avatars, especially for performing these pastimes. These pastimes are eternal activities of the spiritual world, and he's exhibiting them, the same pastimes, but let's say some limited sample. Because when God comes to the material world, and shows himself publicly, it's one thing when he displays himself in the heart of a yogi or a devotee who is meditating on him. Then that appearance can be adjusted in a customized way for that particular devotee. But when he makes his public appearance, then he has to, or he chooses to, limit himself according to the rules of the laws of time and space. Krishna, in his aprakrita, or invisible pastimes, can be doing many things or all things simultaneously. He can be with all his devotees at the same time. But in his visible, public pastimes, he doesn't do that. He only does one thing at a time. And he's only with some devotees and not other devotees. So the visible pastimes are not the full picture. They're in limited dimensions. Krishna doesn't show everything, and he can't show it as freely as he does in the spiritual world. At least, each devotee can only see so much. They can only see Krishna at certain times in certain places. And he performs these visible pastimes in his avatars for his own pleasure. But why does he need to come to a material world to enjoy? He has a better place to enjoy of his own. He has his own place. So he only shows himself in our world for our benefit. It's no benefit for him to come to the material world. Almost none. Okay, if he wants to fight with demons, then he has to come here. He wants a real fight with real demons. There aren't any in the spiritual world. If he wants to come and preach, give enlightenment to fallen conditioned souls, well, he won't find any fallen conditioned souls in the spiritual world. He will have to come to the material world for that. But only for these two things. Does the Lord have any reason of his own to come to the material world? Otherwise, he only comes for our benefit. He displays so many different kinds of pastimes in his different forms in order to reclaim us, to bring us back to him, to attract us again to him, the whole main purpose of his pastime. And because we're conditioned in various ways, he performs various different kinds of pastimes. Some living entities are in deep delusion and need to be freed of that delusion. Some of them are hateful of God, and they have to be killed by him personally, or killed by his devotee. Some of them have misunderstandings that have to be corrected. So Krishna, by doing various things, he helps correct those mistaken ideas and feelings, inappropriate feelings, in those who actually want to be his devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the various pastimes Krishna played of killing demons in his childhood actually represent and are of therapeutic value for us in destroying the demoniac propensities in our own hearts. Killing Putana, killing Bakasura. I don't remember which demon is which quality, but each of the various bad qualities we have are killed. If we hear properly about these different pastimes of child Krishna killing various demons, and we'll be reading these in the next chapters, how Krishna kills one demon after another. That's for our benefit to hear it. So I'll read more of Prabhupada's notes. Prabhupada's not going to explain the name Keshava. As for Keshava, Ka means Brahman, and Isha means Lord Shiva. The personality of Godhead captivates. Interesting word, it doesn't mean capture, it means to enchant. Both Lord Brahma and Lord Mahadeva, or Shiva, by his transcendental qualities. Therefore he is called Keshava. This opinion is given by Sanatana Goswami in his Vaishnava Toshani commentary. It is said that all demigods, accompanied by Trinoyana, Lord Shiva, went to the shore of the ocean of milk and offered their prayers. Through the mantra known as the Purusha Sukta. From this statement it is understood that the demigods cannot directly approach Lord Vishnu, who lies on the ocean of milk, or enter his abode. This is also clearly stated in the Mahabharata, Moksha Dharma, and the next chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has his abode in Goloka. Goloka nāmi jada nīcalecha chatasya. From Lord Krishna comes the Chaturvyuha, the quadruple expansion Sankarsana, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, and Vasudeva. These are innumerable brahmandas. There are innumerable brahmandas, all of which emanate from the pores of Karana Dakshayi Vishnu. And in every Brahmanda there is a Guru Dakshayi Vishnu, who is a partial expansion of Aniruddha. This Aniruddha is a partial expansion of Pradyumna, who is partially represented as Kshirdo Dakshayi Vishnu, the super soul of all living entities. These Vishnu expansions are different from Krishna, who resides in Goloka Vrindavan. When it is said that the demigods offered prayers to the Lord by chanting the Purusha Sukta, this indicates that they pleased the Lord by enunciating prayers of bhakti. The word Vrishabhapati refers to one who satisfies his devotees in every way and frees his devotee from all material anxieties. Vrisha refers to religious performances like sacrifices. Even without the execution of sacrifices, the Lord can still enjoy the supermost comforts of the heavenly planets. The statement that Purushottama, Jagannath, would appear in the house of Vasudev distinguishes the Supreme Personality of Godhead from ordinary persons. The statement that he personally appeared indicates that he did not send his plenary expansion. The word Priyarakam indicates that the Lord appeared to please Rukmini and Radharani. Priya means the most beloved. So Krishna's most beloved devotees, beginning with Srimati Radharani and all the other beloved devotees of the Lord, they very gladly come with Krishna to participate in his pastimes on the earth. Certainly the earth becomes that way the most auspicious place. Swalakshana Vilakshitai. Ime Janapata Shrita Supapo Shati Virda. This is Kunti Devi, and she was living in Hastinapur. Not in Vrindavan, but even in Hastinapur, the capital of Kurus. The earth was flourishing. The villages were all prosperous. The vegetation was very lush and beautiful. Because the ground, the earth, was marked with the footprints of Krishna. Krishna didn't spend much time in Hastinapur. He only visited the populace once in a while, for short visits. Maybe sometimes for a few months. Even in his absence, even though he wasn't there, that he had been there before, that his feet had touched the ground, made the whole place auspicious. And where his devotees lived or do live is the most auspicious place. Just like a Udipi. Krishna appeared as a deity there to Madhvacharya. Before that, Lord Parashuram performed some pastimes in that place. But the Krishna deity, Krishna who was worshipped, never appeared there. Never, in his leelas 5,000 years ago, he never went to Udipi. There was no Krishna leela that was performed there. But it's holy because Krishna's devotees lived there and they worshipped Krishna. Even the places where Krishna never went are connected with his fame because of his devotees' presence. Everything about Krishna is auspicious, including the ground that he touches. And everything that a pure devotee touches, including just the place that he has been, becomes very auspicious. Okay, so are there any questions or comments?
Thank you.
Not really envious. There was some misunderstanding at first, and then it was rectified. But just some pastime. The devotees are never envious of each other, especially Krishna's pleasure devotees. All the other gopis are expansions of Srimati Radharani. There can't be any bad, real bad feelings. It's just some transcendental competition. And all the queens of Dwarka are expansions of the gopis. I don't know why the second queen becomes the first, the second gopi becomes the first queen. Or rather, why Chandravali becomes Rukmini. But that is what Rupa Goswami says in his play, Lovely to Madhava. I haven't studied the play, so I can't tell you why. I don't know.
Because the Rasta there, and it's more
Vaishnava. Yes.
Therefore, the queen
moves
more
suited
to that mood,
Vrindavan. Okay. So Chandravali fits the mood of Dwarka better than Rasta. That's
right. That's the play meant for that.
Yes. So the Madhurya has to become less prominent. Because the Madhurya, Krishna's Madhurya is overpowering. If he lets the speech, if he displays too much of it, more than a small drop of it, then it will ruin the whole Aishwarya. So Srimati Radharani has to make a second decision, not all the way to that, but second. But she's always there. Even if she's not manifest, just like some people don't have a Radharani, but she's there unmanifest. Krishna's never without his beloved pleasure of all.
You mentioned it, Krishna's associate for all very eager to accompany him to be baptized in the material world also.
Yes.
We understand that pastimes in the material world are more appealing for various reasons. For those devotees who are situated in the Parityarasa Madhurya, Parityamadhurya-rasa, would that Parityamadhurya-rasa be emphasized more in the material world because of the antagonism and envy that exists for Krishna that gives rise to the tenets of karma that they bring?
I don't know. There is a region in the spiritual world where Parityarasa is prominent. It's not just a material thing. It's not a thing that only appears in the material world. So, you don't have to come to the material world. You know, to experience any rasa. The rasas are all there. Even the rasas are fighting the demons. It's just the demons aren't there. The rasas deal without the demons. But the rasa of being afraid of demons or Krishna fighting the demons is there. And all the rasas, the Bhartiya rasa of Madhurya rasa is also there fully in the spiritual world. So there's no need, because of a lack of rasa that comes from the material world to get it. And what I understood from working on Brihad Bhagavatamrita and Gopa Kumara, there's no practical difference. But the difference between Krishna's abode, as far as what we're not talking Siddhanta, we're talking what you experience. But Gopa Kumara experience was practically the same. Being in Krishna's spiritual world, his abode in the spiritual world and his abode on the earth. He could hardly see any difference between the two. So I don't know if there's a need to come to the material world. It's just that Krishna's going, they want to go also. They don't want to be left behind. Wherever Krishna goes, they want to go too.
And Krishna is also in the spiritual world.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, they don't want to be left out. They want to go also.
In a place like this, or in Udupi, or places where the devotees are worshiping mainly in Aishwarya Bhava, Madhvacharya insists that this material world is real.
Yes.
And they place great emphasis on this hierarchy of demigods or devotees that they worship in their line also.
Yes.
For that mood, is it preferable to worship in this world? And does that explain the lack of emphasis on Vaikuntha bhakti in the mind?
Well, that, I guess so. They're, you know, when they see how the Sri Vaishnavas are worshipping and talking, they're disturbed. These Sri Vaishnavas, they say, the Madhvas say, all these Sri Vaishnavas have got their heads in the clouds, you know, the Olympians imagining that they're liberated and this and that. And they're, just like they're upset by Krishna's illicit affairs, they're also upset by devotees pretending that they're in the spiritual world. You know, it's not for them, it's not for the Madhvas, it's not for, you know, it's a, liberation is a very distant prospect.
Hardcore Buddhism.
Doing hard for Buddhism.
And conservatism as well.
Yes. So, you know, they're on the waiting list for liberation, but not yet. You know, 100 years, 100 lifetimes from now, we'll worry about it.
For now, just do your Nidham Karma.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, bhakti is there. But that bhakti is Mishra.
Mishra.
So I don't think you can do that in Vaikuntha. You know, there's no Mishra Bhakti in Vaikuntha.
Well, is it truly Mishra though? If the motive is only to please Krishna and they have the solid faith that it's what is pleasing to Krishna rather than to me,
there's still attachment to the material situation. It's still in practice. Maybe in theory you could argue, but theoretically it should have been in practice. I've never seen it. And it should have been there.
Practically on.
Yeah. Maybe in the time of maybe Mundra himself and his immediate followers for some time who are practicing actually should have been maybe. This is apart from the question of Siddhantic disagreements, you know. You can have a disagreement with Siddhanta without still be pure devotees. I mean, Jiva Goswami went out of his way to argue for Svakya Rasa. You know, so synoptically we got a problem. You know, there's apparent conflict, but it's just, I think it's just a game. Jiva Goswami, I don't know the proper explanation. I haven't heard it, but one speculative idea I have is that he was just making fun of himself. You know, look, I'm such a big pundit, I've written, you know, all the Sundarvas. Now at the end of the Krishna Sundarva, Bhakti Sundarva, he goes into the whole 20-day argument, arguing against Parakya Rasa. Now, Krishna can't be an illicit, you know, unmarried paramour. But he has to be married to the devotees. And I think he did it just to, you know, make fun of himself. Yeah. I'm such a big pundit, but look at this. Yeah, I spent 20 pages establishing an erroneous idea.
So the Madhva's attachment to karma, Mishra Bhakti, then is a socio-political fact, or that's a, not a, it's not a Siddhanta, it's just a
well, there are ideas built into Madhva's teachings that support Mishra Bhakti.
Yeah. To support Mishra Bhakti.
Yeah, because the idea, especially the idea that all the jivas aren't pure. That there are jivas who are constitutionally in the modes. In fact, they all are. They don't distinguish clearly between Shiva Sattva and ordinary Sattva. They don't clearly distinguish between Madhva, they don't clearly distinguish between the spiritual and material energies. And therefore you've got, you know, two-thirds of the jivas can't become liberated. So if most people can't become liberated, then there's no use for Shiva Bhakti for them. It's not for everybody, it's for a small minority.
You know, they say that the profession of the Asura jiva is to be demons. That is their constitutional position.
To realize that they're enemies of God, they hate God, and then be sent to hell for eternity.
Sure.
That's their perfection.
Yeah. Why help them?
So that, you know, that kind of siddhanta does have a big effect on what they're going to practice.
On the other hand,
you know, if you're a sattvic soul, you're going to get the liberation. You don't really have to be too remorseful or do too much. It'll happen. Just, you know, sit back and wait 100 lifetimes and you'll get the liberation. It's your duty to serve God, but it's not like it's your responsibility to do anything. God creates jivas who are condemned. They have no hope. They have no chance of doing anything right. And they just argue, well, God should not be judged morally. Now, why does God condemn creatures to damnation? That's God. You can't judge him like you judge other people. That's their only argument.
It's very similar to Christianity.
Yeah. Predestination. But, you know, if everything's predestined, then we don't have responsibility, we don't have to feel sorry, and we don't have to make any effort. Okay. Hare Krishna. I thank you all, Lord Shiva, Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.